State leaders are trimming the budget in big and small ways in the ongoing effort to reduce deficit spending. But even though oil prices are less than half of what they were a year ago, some of the so-called mega projects that were initially put on hold when the Walker administration took office are active again. There's federal dollars in the mix, but do these dollars have to be spent for a specific bridge, road, and a dam, or could they be used elsewhere? Mega projects and state spending is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek, it makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, that's kind of interesting that we're starting off with talking about big projects, and we just heard about girls in engineering. Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today's discussion is about some of the mega projects that were put on hold: the Juneau Access Road, the Kinnick Arm Crossing, and the Susitna-Wautana Dam. Three of six multi-billion dollar projects that Governor Walker recently put back in play. Critics say we can't afford them. Supporters say we can't afford not to build them. Here to help us understand the arguments on both sides is Pat Pitney. Pat is the director of the Office of Management and Budget and joins us from the studios of our great partners at KTOO in Juneau. Good morning, Pat. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. Also joining the conversation is Lois Epstein. Lois is an engineer and Arctic Program Director with the Wilderness Society and joins me in the studio here at Alaska Public Media. Good morning. Welcome, Lois.
Thanks, Lori. And it's great you're doing this important show.
And we're going to start with the basics. The day after Christmas, Governor Walker sent out an order mandating that spending on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, the Susitna-Wautana Dam, the Juneau Access Road, the Alaska Standalone Pipeline, or ASAP, Natural Gas Project, the Ambler Mining Access Road, and the Kodiak Launch Facility would all be put on hold. Now the Susitna Dam, the Kinnick Arm Bridge, and the Juneau Road are back. We'll also be talking about what's the status of some of these other projects later on. But let's take the first three one at a time. And I also want to, before we launch into this, I want to invite you to join our conversation too, Alaskans. You can call across the state at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. Or if you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. The Kinnick Arm Bridge, we'll start there. This a project expense that could reach close to $1 billion. Pat, what will the state spend on this project in the next year, and why was the decision made to bring it back online?
So I think it's a misnomer to say it's back online. The estimated cost is somewhere around $500,000 to go through a due diligence process for a TIFIA loan. And the TIFIA loan is a transportation infrastructure loan. It's a very low interest loan for the state. But the biggest thing for the state that it provides is the financing model that has been proposed, which is a toll for the bridge, a viable option, because you have to go through essentially a whole revenue bond exercise, and would this be an investor quality project? So what it does is it tells us if it's viable from a financial standpoint. And that's an important first step to whether it goes forward or not. If it's not a viable financial obligation, then it doesn't work. So that is the process that we're going through, and it's a very small process relative to the scope of the nearly billion, well, just over $1 billion project.
So the TIFIA, Transportation Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act, TIFIA loan, $300 million is needed, is that correct? The loan has been turned down in the past. Why would the prospect be any better now at a time of budget cuts on the federal level?
And I don't believe it's been turned down in the past. I think it hasn't gone through the process in the past. It's estimated the request is going to be a $375 million loan, and it could the interest rate on these particular loans could be as low as 1.5%. It's a process that you go through, and it will say whether the financing is viable. And we want to see if it's viable, and then it makes the choice on a project a different choice than what we currently have, is where we don't know that the financing option is viable yet.
What is being spent on going forward with the TIFIA process?
We're expecting it to be about $500,000.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Are other federal funds also being sought?
Well, it's a three-component project. So you have the first component is the 90-10 transportation match. The second component is the TIFIA loan. And the third component is a state revenue bond. And that would also be paid off by tolls. It would be the last item paid off. And that is estimated currently at $250,000.
And Pat, what's your
$250 million, I'm sorry.
Sorry. What's your understanding about using the money for other projects if it was decided to take those funds, the federal money, and use for projects such as other bridges or bridges that are already in existence that may need replacing in other parts of Alaska? Can that money be shifted?
Right. So the federal priorities are set up by the State Transportation Infrastructure Plan, and it's a plan that looks at the entire state and prioritizes projects. And then, of course, from there, it goes into the legislative process. And the larger projects are prioritized for allocation of those federal funds. And then smaller projects are packaged in what I call buckets. So the priority of the state transportation plan and the legislative priorities, those are available for the myriad of projects around the state. There's some qualifying aspects to a particular project of why you can use federal money and why you couldn't. But for the most part, our transportation, new construction and maintenance are available for that 90-10. And we get roughly $500 million a year from the federal government. And as you know, this year, essentially the only capital funding that was provided in the state budget was for the transportation match.
I want to get Lois Epstein in here now. Lois, again, is an engineer. She's the Arctic Program Director with the Wilderness Society. Lois, what's your understanding of how the federal money must be used for, in particular, we're talking now about the Kinnick Arm Crossing, the bridge project. With that specific proposal in mind, what's your understanding about the federal dollars?
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I used to serve on the local planning organization for Anchorage. I was on the technical committee, that's AMATS, and learned a lot about federal funding. I've also taken some training classes when I was working full-time on transportation issues. And the way federal funding typically works, and Pat referred to the 90-10, much of the federal highway and bridge money comes as 90% federal money, 10% state match. And there are other pots that have different ratios, but that's a very typical program. The Kinnick Arm Bridge, however, is looking for this TIFIA loan that we talked about. They have applied maybe about six times. It's always hard to keep track of all their applications. They're not all public. But they haven't been invited to continue to do a full application. They've just sent in a letter asking that they be continued. The projects, the TIFIA projects, the low-cost loans that have been funded are Generally, projects in densely populated states and communities, Tappan Zee Bridge on the Hudson outside of New York City, bridges across the Ohio River. You also have the extension of the Los Angeles subway. So the likelihood that we're going to be moved up to the top of the pile for a TIFIA loan is actually quite small. So it while with a new administration, I understand that for a small amount of money they could find out whether we'll be invited to continue forward for this TIFIA loan. The chances are quite low that we'll be seeing any TIFIA money in the near future. And then just to elaborate on your question about how the funding works, we get a formula amount based on the federal transportation bill. Every year, Alaska gets a certain amount, other states get a certain amount, and we have to divide that up among the projects. So by focusing so much on these very expensive mega projects and doing enormous amounts of studies, there's an opportunity cost there. We've spent over $80 million federal dollars for the Kinnickahn Bridge. That money could have been used to build, for example, the Eagle River Bridge on the Glenn Highway in the other direction. We only had enough money for one direction. People in South Central know that that's been a lot of construction going on right now. We're going to have to do that again when we eventually build that in the other direction. The Wasilla Bypass, that's something that would enable freight and travelers to go past Wasilla much more quickly. That's a good project that will diminish the need for anything like a very expensive Kinnickahn Bridge.
Pat, you have been listening right along with me to what Lois has to say about the chances for this Kinnickahn Crossing project to rise up to the top of the pile for TIFIA loans. What have you heard about what the chances are for this project?
Based on the progress to date, the reports we're getting is that it's very possible. So it's a bit of a two-part process. So you send in the letter, and the letter has been sent in, and then you're invited to apply. And that invitation could come in a month. It could come in 3 months. So then you're invited to make the full application. That full application is where the due diligence exists. And the reports we have is that we anticipate that we will be asked to provide a full application, and that if you're asked to do a full application, usually there were enough signs that that you'll be given reasonable consideration.
The Anchorage Assembly's AMATS Policy Committee, the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Solutions Policy Committee, in July passed a resolution raising concerns about the viability of the project. Lois, what were their main concerns? What did they say?
I think from the Anchorage perspective, we're very concerned that if the toll revenue doesn't come in as anticipated, if there are cost overruns, Anchorage is going to suffer over the long run because the rest of the state is going to say, well, you got your bridge. We know you have other needs, but you made your choice. So we really need to be very careful before starting these types of projects. And one concern I think is important to raise is that the Kinnickahn Bridge team is developing its own projections for how many users there are likely to be. They're not using the projections that come out of the ICER, the Institute of Social and Economic Research. They're not using the projections that the Department of Labor is making for employment and population in the MATSU. So they've got their own staff, their own analysis. And it's absolutely a very fair question about whether their projections about the number of users are going to be accurate. Right now, there's very little development on the other side of the bridge. The toll is going to be among the highest in the country. You can get to Anchorage from Wasilla and eastward faster via the Glenn Highway, and it's less mileage. So why would you take a bridge where you would have to pay a toll?
Pat Pitney, does this resolution that the Anchorage Assembly Policy Committee and the AMATS Policy Committee passed, does this carry weight with Governor Walker?
It certainly will be a consideration, but until the financial markets decide whether this is a viable investment, and that's the TIFIA loan, you know, is backed by the financial markets that would purchase the loan. They will check all of the information that built the assumptions of whether this is a viable investment or not. And that due diligence is a key piece to a next decision. Of course, the community views are important, and those will be considered. But we need to know if we even have the viability of the project, because it is dependent on this TIFIA loan.
And what about the idea that, hey, you spent your bankroll on a bridge, Anchorage, so if you have other needs, too bad. There's other things going on around the state, and your money you made a choice on a bridge. Are regional considerations brought into the mix in that way, Pat?
Well, it's political. I mean, you have the lion's share of the appropriating body is from Anchorage and the Mat-Su area. And so is it always a consideration? Of course it is. But there's also the vast majority of the legislators in that area. So every choice in a constrained budget time has another choice that's been passed by. So yes, it's there, but it's these are legislatively vetted projects. So there's many checks and balances out there as we go forward on what the choices are.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are discussing today three of the mega projects that were put on hold in December and are now back online. The Kinnick Arm Crossing, the Juneau Access Road, and the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Dam. One last question about the Kinnick Arm Crossing, and then we're going to move on to the Susitna Dam. What about the Cook Inlet beluga? They're listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. What is the expense that's added for mitigating impacts to this population? There has to be a National Marine Fisheries Marine Mammal Protection Act permit needed. Is that secured?
This is Pat. There's a biological opinion from the National Marine Fisheries Service, and that it was no adverse effect. And so the extent to which there's additional permits required, I'm not the expert on, but we do have a biological opinion that there's no adverse effect.
Lois, would you like to comment?
Yeah, the bridge design itself is actually a bridge and causeway, so it's going to pinch the volume of the water coming through Kinnick Arm, which also, not only is it going to have effects on belugas, it is going to have effects on salmon. It's going to have effects on the silt that comes down that the Corps of Engineers has to clear from Point Mackenzie, from the Port of Anchorage. So these are very complicated engineering and biological issues. So it's not an easy conversation to speak about quickly, but it is true that there will be many implications. And one of my main points about the mega projects, having worked on them for many years now, is that we really have to be careful before we start these projects because they do suck up so much money. But they also, as we learn more in studying the projects, there are different decision points when we should think about choosing to change direction.
All right. Thank you. So we are going to move on. Thank you to Lois Epstein and Pat Pitney, who are on the line with us. We're going to move on now and we can come back to the bridge at some point in the program if we have time. But let's move on to the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Dam. Pat, the Alaska Energy Authority has been given authorization to spend $6.6 million in leftover funds related to this project. It's a $5.5 billion dam proposal. So what does $6 million do?
$6 million only ties up a few of the studies that are in progress. And if we don't tie them up and complete them, we lose all of the value from those studies. So we don't anticipate, under the current budget constraints and the current oil prices, that this one will move. But there's been, you know, over about $180 million investment in the work to study the region. And that work could extend to other opportunities in the future. And it's only to get the value out of that previous investment and get as far as we can with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission study plan so that we don't lose what we've already done. We don't anticipate moving it in the near term past that, given the fiscal constraints that we're facing, but we wanted to preserve the value of what we have.
And so if you took that money and is that money, if you decided to move it to a different energy project, a renewable energy project, could that be done, or is this money just tied to this project?
That would be a legislative call. So in a budget proposal, the governor could recommend to shift that money to back into the general fund to pretty much anything, but then it would be the legislature that would vote whether or not to take the money out of the project.
Okay. Let's get Sam Snyder on now. Sam is an organizer with Trout Unlimited. Sam, you're opposed to the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Project. What's your opposition?
Broadly speaking, looking at the future, the state has a responsibility to invest in hydropower to help communities around the state. But there's a lot of good projects that we do have, what we might call low-impact hydropower. But there's a real big difference between what communities like Sitka, Cordova, and Kodiak are doing to support their communities and something like the Susitna-Watonna Dam. We have about 100 years of data on hydropower projects in the Pacific Northwest, and the record's pretty bleak with their impact on salmon runs. So we don't want to see those impacts replicated or repeated, those mistakes repeated up here in Alaska. The Susitna-Watonna project would not only have huge impacts on the salmon and our fisheries, but obviously we've talked about the cost. AEA estimates $5.5 billion, but has admitted up to $8 billion. And independent analysis shows maybe as high as $10 billion. There's a lot of costs at play here, starting with the fish as well as to the state, and we don't really believe that it solves the energy needs that we have. So our big question for the administration has been, why are we still investing in this project? I believe the governor could, under his power, also shut the project down in those 6.6. I believe it's actually slightly more than 6.6. It was 6.6 of unencumbered funds that were released to be spent, but they have other funds still. It was a total of $33.5 million still in their budget left over from the Parnell administration. But I believe not only in addition to the legislature that the governor could shut down the project and move those funds back into the general fund. I guess one final point is that we don't disagree with wrapping up the current studies so that folks like NMFS and other agencies can put their reviews of AEA's work, including some strong criticism of their work, on the official FERC record. But there's no reason to put a bow on this and put it on the shelf for somebody else to pick it back up. We should shut it down and stop having this conversation about it, really. But there is some value in finishing those studies, getting federal review of them from agencies so that they can be referred to later, but there's really no reason to keep this thing on life support beyond that.
And I would say that is the plan, is to get these studies complete so we can get those reviews, as many of those reviews as possible, to preserve what was already invested.
Sam, a follow-up question to you is, the idea behind projects like this is to lessen dependence on fossil fuel.
Right.
Carbon's impacting water temperatures, acidification, the dam impacts waterways in the valley, but would mitigate carbon emissions. How do you balance the need for cleaner power against the need for fish?
I think we have to look at building at clean power opportunities in places that, unlike the Susitna-Watonna project, Susitna-Watonna project would not, for the size and impact, create all that much power. You know, early discussions where it would create max capacity of 600 megawatts. Last year, AEA revised that estimate to somewhere around, I think, 435 megawatts. That's really not a whole lot of power, considering the size, scale, and impacts of the projects. When we could invest in more localized projects that don't impact Salmon Run, that are that we're not going to have to use hatcheries to replicate those, that aren't going to impact local communities, but actually support those communities and are much more reasonable when it comes to costs. And further, I think part of the issue that we face in the state is the upgrade of the transmission line. That needs to happen regardless of whether this project is there or not. We have a lot of stranded power on the grid. So why are we not investing in those options rather than looking at a project like Susitna, which would have huge impacts and create very little power in the long run?
All right. I want to follow up with a few more questions about the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Dam as we're talking about mega projects today. But we're going to take a short break and then come back, finish up on the dam discussion, and then move on to the Juneau Access Road as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about mega projects that are back online. We have Pat Pitney, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, with us on the line from KTOO in Juneau. Lois Epstein is with us. She's an engineer and Arctic Program Director with the Wilderness Society. We also have Sam Snyder with Trout Unlimited on the phone. And we're talking right now about the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Dam. You can join our conversation if you'd like. The statewide, the number is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. In the Anchorage area, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We have had several emails this morning, and I did not count them up, but as I said, several, about the Susitna-Watonna Dam, and they are all not in favor of the project. Pat, Governor Sarah Palin first put forward the idea of getting 50% of the state's energy from renewable sources by 2025. Governor Parnell signed a bill in 2010 setting that ambitious goal. Is Governor Walker also looking at staying on that path, at pursuing this?
Well, renewable energy is very important, and we're in a slightly different budgetary environment than the Palin and Parnell administration was in. The current state budget, the revenue, is 80% less this year than it was in 2012. So our constraints are much more acute than was faced in the previous administration. So renewable energy is very important, but also a stable state revenue is also important. And I would say that the gas line is a very important priority for this administration.
So I want to go back to Sam for just a moment. Sam, when we were talking earlier about the Kinnickarm crossing, Lois mentioned salmon and silt. And you mentioned concerns about the salmon and the Susitna-Watonna Hydro Dam. But are there concerns also about silt building up behind a bridge that is getting water from glacier runoff?
You mean behind the dam?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big concern. I think that simply put, yes. This AEA often speaks about what they say is limited fish above where the dam would be. But when they talk about that, they're ignoring the drastic impacts that this dam would have downstream. This dam would fundamentally change the hydrologic cycle of the river. And in addition to changing the way the water flows in the winter and summertime, it would also drastically impact habitat, that in part being the movement of silt through the system down the river into Cook Inlet. I think in the Pacific Northwest, we're seeing the restoration of rivers and the important impact of the return of silt to these systems, to inlets, to rivers. The Elwha River is a great example of how the system is recovering, because now you have the movement of sediment, and that's not a glacially fed system, I don't believe, but still it would have a great impact on the downstream habitat of the river.
Lois, excuse me, some states don't consider hydro a renewable energy. Why is that? Do you know?
I don't.
Okay, sorry. Sorry to put you on the spot there. We were talking. Did you want to jump in there, Sam?
Well, I'd be happy to. I think that the question of hydro and renewability is the size and scale of hydro. And the record is coming back pretty strongly against hydropower projects of this size and renewability, whether we should consider them renewable. There's concern that actually they're not only they're not fixing greenhouse gas emissions, but in some cases they're actually causing greater degree of greenhouse gas emissions because of plant degradation and things like that. So it's a matter of size and scale. And then also when we're talking about impacts to other aspects of the ecosystem, that's how we need to think about the question of renewability and hydropower. And so we need to think about low-impact hydropower, how it impacts our fisheries, the size of the dam, the way the dam is constructed, where it's constructed, and things like that.
Lois, we were talking earlier about the plan of getting 50% of the state's energy from renewable sources by 2025. Do you think that's possible in 10 years?
You know, I basically have a lot of expertise in transportation, less so on energy, although like any Alaskan, I want to follow that. And it is definitely possible. Like Pat, I'm quite a supporter of getting a gas line in the state. I think most Alaskans see that as a way we ought to be going, and from a lower carbon perspective, especially if we make sure that there's a very little leakage. Conventional gas coming from the North Slope is going to have a lot less emissions than hydraulically fractured gas coming from Lower 48. So that is the one mega project, and it certainly qualifies as a mega project, that is going to require an enormous amount of investment by the state. So all these other projects, their costs have to be looked at in terms of us having limited revenue, the federal government having its own budgetary problems. The federal transportation law probably means they're in the process of renewing that this summer, that there's going to be less money over the long run for Alaska. So we need to be very careful how we use the limited resources we have.
I want to follow up on that very point. One of the listeners that has sent an email today asked about that very thing. We're taking a bit of an aside now to the Gas Line project, but this listener said, shouldn't we be saving all that we can now to help meet the obligations of the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Project, which is upwards of $5 billion or so? Pat, your thoughts about these points about saving money for that project?
Well, it's very important, but we've also, you know, made significant investments. And if we take the small amount of funding to get these projects to the next logical decision, we've preserved those investments. So I think it's a matter of, you know, saying that these projects are online is a bit of a misnomer. We're taking them to the next logical decision point and preserving all of the investment we've had to date. Now, saying that, where is our priority? Our priority is significantly around the gas pipeline and how do we assure that there's the funding and the investment necessary to take advantage of a successful project on that gas line. So that's clearly this administration's priority, and we're focused all in on doing that. But to waste, you know, upwards of $300 million by not doing that last finished point on what's already been, up to 99% done, would not be very responsible. So we're just preserving the investments we've had to date.
Lois?
One point that's come up is the repayment aspect to the federal government for money that's been spent on transportation projects. And there are a couple ways to look at that. One is, well, we've spent $80 million, just to use the Kinnickahn Bridge, for example. Therefore, we should spend the remaining hundreds of millions of dollars for the future because we've already spent that and we don't want to have to repay that $80 million. But as it turns out, the $80 million could also be used. The federal government allows that money to be used for similar type projects. We would, in effect, pay it back and then immediately reallocate it and invest it in Alaska projects that are similar, road and bridge projects. So, given that we have more needs than we have dollars for, especially when we're talking about maintenance, where the amount we've spent on that hasn't increased in real dollars since 1983, it would make sense to take the money and use it for things that we actually need.
We are going to move on to the Juneau Access Road in just a moment. But before we do, I wanted to go to the phones. Did you want to add something quickly, Pat?
I just wanted to respond that, the risk of having to pay back $80 million on the Kinnickahn crossing is a misnomer. There was a stop point where much of that $80 million is not at risk. There is some amount. But when we would pay it back, we would still be paying that as a state dollar versus getting the 90-10 match. So you would reduce your match down to something that's, 40% federal to 60% state on that funding. So, and we're also not talking about making the decision for the next millions and millions. We're making the decision. We're waiting to see if this is financially viable. So I think there's a bit of a misnomer in saying we can pay that back and get the full value. We would not get the full value of what we paid back.
Well, let's go to the phones for a moment and get some of our callers on. This is Talk of Alaska. Ray is in Anchorage. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori. I'm a real estate developer. I've been in Anchorage in the business for over 40 years. And there's one thing that's glaringly missing on that Kinnickahn crossing. And that is that the landowners that are going to be most affected, those people whose land will double, triple in value, who will be able to subdivide their property and sell off acre lots, aren't being asked to participate in the financing. And that is unusual. For example, if you had 40 acres in South Anchorage and the sewer line was coming out your direction, you would be assessed for a portion of the cost of that sewer line. And when you connected to the sewer line, you would have to pay a fee. And the developers of property, or would-be developers of property over there, when they sell off an acre lot, there should be a fee that comes with the building permit for the home construction. And it should go to the bridge, because the person selling that lot is able to sell it for twice, three times what he'd otherwise sold it for. He's a beneficiary. I suspect that even the affected persons themselves, if there were a tiered level of how much effect on value of your property it's going to have, they would vote to assess themselves, because it doesn't cost them anything until such time that they're taking out a loan to build on their property. So there's no upfront cost for them, but over time, that would be a very substantial contribution to the payment of that bridge.
I like the way you think.
Lois, did you have a comment?
You know, this goes to the question about what the projections are and what it's going to cost to develop at Point McKenzie, and how much of the Mat-Su Barrows money is going to have to go to sewage and schools and police. And is it at all likely, as we are individuals are driving less and less, that in 50 years, we're all going to still be commuting from the Mat-Su to Anchorage for jobs? You know, it's the experts tell us that it is unlikely for Point McKenzie to grow at the rate that the Kinnickahn Bridge team is saying it's going to grow. And it's an expensive proposition if we go that route.
All right. Well, I want us to move on now to the Juneau Access Road so that we get a conversation fully developed here. Pat Pitney, there is, I'm hoping this is correct, $900,000 in appropriations remaining for this project to finalize the environmental impact statement. Is that right?
There's actually more money than that remaining. What we've authorized is to take this project to the next decision point in the federal process to preserve our past investment, that the Department of Transportation is authorized to use up to $900,000. So that's on top of the roughly $27 million that's been used to date.
What's the thinking with moving this forward?
It's to get it to – so the federal funding comes with a federal process, and it's to – go through the federal process to bring it to that next logical decision point. That preserves the already investment that we have. That brings it – so what that will do is put out eight different alternatives on the table. That's the logical decision point. Now we have eight alternatives, ranging from take the road as far up the east side as possible – to get it as close to Haines as possible, to do nothing, and, you know, six more alternatives in between. Getting it to that point preserves all of the investment we've made to date. So it's $900,000 to preserve the $27 million investment to date.
Lois, would you like to get a comment in there?
Yeah, sure. To a large extent, the Walker administration inherited a lot of previous decisions, some of which weren't that terrific by the legislature or previous decision points where the direction should have changed. And it was during the George Bush administration that the federal government decided that there could not be a road all the way to Skagway because it would affect the protected areas along the way. So you have, it's not just a road with Juneau Access, it's a road that would be, you'd have to change, freight would have to change onto a ferry. You can't go all the way. That, of course, means the expenses, the annual expenses for operating that operation are going to be even higher because you have road expenses and ferry expenses as opposed to just the ferry expenses that you have now. So on an ongoing basis, that is, if this were to move forward, which is unclear, as we heard from Pat, it would be a more expensive annual cost to the state than it would be with the existing ferry system.
Well, let's go back to the phones. Tom is in Anchorage and has a comment about the Juneau Access Project. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call, Lori. Yeah, the Juneau Access Road is a horrendous feat of engineering, if it can be done, and very expensive. But to get it kind of stack the deck in favor of it, the previous administration contracted to build a couple day boats. These are being built in Alaska in our shipyards because they can't build anything really bigger. The problem is that the Alaska Marine Highway serves more than just shuttling during the day. And these vessels do not have any crew quarters, no kitchen, no passenger staterooms, nothing that allows them to have any duration. So if they had to respond to an emergency, a grounding, a tanker spill, something like that, they really wouldn't be of much use. One of the real bothersome things is this is a blatant attempt to bust the Marine Highway Union to reduce their hours significantly. But to do that, they have to spend a huge amount of money to build this very expensive road that doesn't really, as has been said, it doesn't get to anything but a ferry dock further north than the one currently north outside of Juneau. These boats are called day boats. Originally, we had what was called an Alaska-class ferry that was an ocean-going thing. These are not, but the previous administration renamed these Alaska-class to kind of confuse the issue. But what they really are Puget Sound-class. These things would be just great in San Francisco Bay or Puget Sound, but serving inland passage communities or getting out on the North Pacific and getting to the Aleutians, they are completely incapable of doing, not just because of the lack of facilities on them. And they are being built. We're spending money on them now as a kind of, well, you're going to have spent money on this, so you have to complete the road. And that's really kind of backwards thinking. It's the same kind of thinking that had the previous administration want to build more projects than Alaska could ever possibly afford.
Okay, Tom, I want to jump back in there now because we're running out of time and we have got a lot more to discuss. But I want to give Pat an opportunity to comment on a couple things. First of all, is the plan, Pat, to close the Auk Bay terminal and build a brand new ferry terminal 48 miles down the road?
No. There is no plan. There is taking this to the definition of the 8 alternatives that are part of that, the EIS, getting to the record of decision for the Juneau Access. And so there will be 8 alternatives, 8 different plans that are then looked at. And among those 8 plans, then that's the decision point. So we're at a record of decision. We have these 8 different alternatives that we can look at. And like I said, ranging from one to the other. The state did decide prior to this administration to build the day boats. Those are built or almost, I mean, I think the last one's coming off here shortly. They're built. Those are sunk costs. We can't reel back that decision. It was. So now you have these 8 alternatives that we'll be looking at to decide how do we as a state want to go forward. But what it does by getting to that record of decision is it allows us to make that conscious review of those 8 alternatives and preserve the $27 million that was already spent on that project without having the state have to pay that back.
All right, we're going to continue this discussion about mega projects on Talk of Alaska today and hopefully get a few more calls in as Talk of Alaska continues after a short break statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We have been talking about the mega projects that the three of the six that were put back online. And before we move on to asking about some of the other projects that were kind of left on hold and asking about the status of those, Pat, I wanted to ask you about some comments that you made to the Juneau Chamber of Commerce in July. You were urging a discussion of the state's fiscal future, saying this is not a problem on the margins. This is a real structural issue for Alaska. There will have to be changes. Are you concerned that Alaskans could be getting a confused message? We're broke. You have to tighten the belts. We could have years of multi-billion dollar deficits, but we're also putting projects back online that were taken off. Are you concerned about that?
Well, first, again, we're not putting these projects back online. We're taking them to the next logical decision point to protect the investments that have been made. So to say that, you know, we're all in on a $5 billion dam project under the current constraints, absolutely not. So I think it's the words that these are back online are, we're taking these to the next logical decision point so that a long-term choice can be made while we've protected what we've already invested. So going to the fiscal issue, however, it is a real structural piece. But you don't want to, as a state, undo your future opportunity because you have a short-term structural issue that needs to be solved. You want to keep an eye on what is going to make this state strong. How do we preserve our opportunities for economic growth in the future? Make smart decisions about the investments that have been made to date.
Let's go back to the phones for one quick phone call here from Mike in Skagway. Quickly, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, thanks a lot. This is Mike Corswell in Skagway. I was the former chair of the Marine Transportation Advisory Board for the state of Alaska, also the president of Southeast Conference Regional Economic Development Organization in Southeast. On a personal level, I think that the Juneau Road is probably a bad idea. And as far as any administration that does move forward with building of the road, it's going to be a real nightmare for them cost-wise and overall costs in the long term. It's not supported on the Upper Lynn Canal by the communities of Haines and Skagway pretty strongly. And a lot of people in Juneau probably, you know, more 50-50 there, but it's not greatly supported. I think that the shuttle ferry boats we're talking about can still be used within the process and some of the alternatives. Just for Pat's clarification, the first shuttle boat is in the process of being developed and built, and then the second one will be, you know, coming online after that. But they're still in the maybe the beginning construction phases. But there is alternatives that will allow those boats to be used. I agree with some of the comments of the earlier person talking about the change in those, but they can be applied to some of the alternatives that will come out. Anyway, I just think that the Juneau Road is a bad idea for this administration to follow through with. I realize your decision to move ahead with the getting to the point of decision. I'm not necessarily against that, but I think after that, pretty much put a fork in it and let's get on with making the Marine Highway System a better entity.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Pat, I want to get a question in quickly before the end of the program about the other projects beyond the three that we've been discussing. The Alaska Standalone Pipeline ASAP, the Kodiak Launch Facility, and the more than 200-mile road to the Ambler Mining District. Tell us what the status is of those projects that were also put on hold in December.
So the Alaska Standalone Pipeline was a separate in-state gas pipeline project. This administration came in and says, we are going to do one economically viable gas line. We would like to have the alternative. We would like to have an alternative out there to make sure that we can move forward in the event the Alaska LNG didn't work. the effort of this administration is all within the AKLNG project with the three major corporations. The Alaska Standalone Pipeline was, the funding for that was halted, and then any future investment in an Alaska Standalone Pipeline would be strictly in support of making the Alaska LNG project possible. So that was changed probably in the February timeframe, and it was changed through the Administrative Order 274. So that decision was done early on. The Alaska Aerospace Corporation is still under the AO 271, and the funding that there was $25 million in funding, of which $3 million has stayed with the project. $22 million was already reallocated in the budgeting process. In addition, the Alaska Aerospace had received state funding for operations. That state funding was zeroed out with the recommendation of this administration and followed through with the legislature, so that corporation is no longer getting a state subsidy. They are looking towards privatization and possibly a public-private partnership, but they're working on that, and we anticipate a plan in the December timeframe.
And in our last minute, the Ambler Mining District Road.
The Ambler Mining District Road is an industrial access road, and the challenges to get it to an EIS approval. But the intent of the road is to work like the Red Dog Mine Road, which is industry funded. So that cost would be recovered over time through essentially tolls.
Quickly, Lois, a comment?
Yeah. Since the EIS hasn't been started, this is actually something I urge the administration to rethink, whether it really should be. It's been a project that's been around for a long time. The state doesn't get much money for mining to begin with. All kinds of bad implications of this.
Well, thank you so much. We've been talking about mega projects and getting them to the next phase. And thank you to Pat Pitney, the Director of Office of Management and Budget for the state, in the studios of KTOO in Juneau. Lois Epstein was here with us in Anchorage. She is an engineer and the Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society. And Sam Snyder joined us from Trout Unlimited on phone from the Valley. And thanks to you for joining us today for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.